Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us for Arapahoe County News, read by Austin. Today we'll be reading the following main articles. Supreme Court blocks, for now, new deportations under 18th century wartime law. Broomfield man gets life in prison for killing his wife after posing as ex-boyfriend and stalking her. Aurora mayor and local think tank pushes work first strategy for homelessness. Mother-daughter keep needlework alive. And following up with other miscellaneous articles. Sentinel, Nation and World. Supreme Court blocks, for now, new deportations under 18th century wartime law. In a brief order, the court directed the Trump administration not to remove Venezuelans held in the Blue Bonnet Detention Center until further order of this court. Written by Nicholas Riccardi, Associated Press, and Mark Sherman, Associated Press, April 19, 2025. There are three ads off to the side of the page. The first ad, get paid for good grades. Earn up to $15 for A's and B's. Your school, your community, your credit union. 303-360-0987. Districtcreditunion.com. There's also a QR code with a Apply Now button off to the left-hand side of the ad. The second ad, Centennial Muse. There's a list of different events happening. May 4th, West Barker Magic is Funny. The Bug Theater, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Plant and Pour, Taluna Distillery, Arvada, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, is your dog getting enough exercise for a healthy lifestyle? Moss, Denver, Denver, Colorado. The Wiz, Saturday the 19th, Denver for the Center of Arts, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Liquid Stranger, 16 plus, The Mission Ballroom, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, The Motet, 16 and over, The Ogden Theater, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, 2025 State Leadership Conference, Denver, Colorado. The third ad, Mountain View Baptist Church. Repent and believe, John 3:16. Be our guest this Sunday, Sunday service, 11 a.m., Century Elementary School, 2500 South Granby Way, Aurora, Colorado. There is some blue mountains with an orange sunset in the background. Washington. The Supreme Court on Saturday blocked, for now, the deportations of any Venezuelans held in northern Texas under an 18th century wartime law. In a brief order, the court directed the Trump administration not to remove the Venezuelans held in the Blue Bonnet Detention Center until further order of this court. Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dissented. The High Court acted in an emergency appeal from the American Civil Liberties Union, contending that immigration authorities appeared to be moving to restart removals under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. The Supreme Court had said earlier in April that deportations could proceed only if those about to be removed had a chance to argue their case in court and were given a, quote, reasonable time, end quote, to contest their pending removals. Quote, we are deeply relieved that the court has temporarily blocked the removals. These individuals were in imminent danger of spending the rest of their lives in a brutal Salvadorian prison without ever having any due process, end quote, ACLU lawyer Lee Glarnett said in an email. On Friday, two federal judges refused to step in as lawyers for the men, launched a desperate legal campaign to prevent their deportation, even as one judge said the case raised legitimate concerns. Early Saturday, the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals also refused to issue an order protecting the detainees from being deported. The administration is expected to return to the Supreme Court quickly in an effort to persuade the justices to lift their temporary order. The ACLU had already sued to block deportations of two Venezuelans held in Blue Bonnet facility and sought an order barring removals of any immigrants in the region under the Alien Enemies Act. In an emergency filing early Friday, the ACLU warned that immigration authorities were accusing other Venezuelan men held there of being members of the Tren de Aragua gang, which would make them subject to President Donald Trump's use of the act. The act has only been invoked three previous times in U.S. history, most recently during World War II, to hold Japanese-American civilians in internment camps. The Trump administration contended it gave them power to swiftly remove immigrants they identified as members of the gang, regardless of their immigration status. Following the unanimous high court order on April 9th, federal judges in Colorado, New York, and Southern Texas promptly issued orders barring removal of detainees under the AEA until the administration provides a process for them to make claims in court. But there had been no such order issued in the area of Texas that covers Bluebonnet, which is located 24 miles north of Abilene in the far northern end of the state. U.S. District Judge James Wesley Hendricks, a Trump appointee, this week declined to bar the administration from removing the two men identified in the ACLU lawsuit because Immigration and Customs Enforcement filed sworn declarations that they would not be immediately deported. He also balked at the issuing a broader order prohibiting removal of all Venezuelans in the area under the act because he said removals hadn't started yet. But the ACLU's Friday filing included sworn declarations from three separate immigration lawyers who said their clients in Bluebonnet were given paperwork indicating they were members of Tren de Aragua and could be deported by Saturday. In one case, immigration lawyer Karen Brown said her client, identified by initials, was told to sign papers in English even though the client only spoke Spanish. Quote, ICE informed FGM that these papers were coming from the president and that he will be deported even if he did not sign it, end quote, Brown wrote. Gellern said in a Friday evening hearing before District Judge James E. Boasberg in Washington, D.C., that the administration initially moved Venezuelans to its South Texas immigration facility for deportation, but since a judge banned deportations in that area, it has funneled them to the Bluebonnet facility, where no such orders exist. He said witnesses report the men were being loaded on buses Friday evening to be taken to the airport. With Hendricks not agreeing to the ACLU's request for an emergency order, the group turned to Boasberg, who initially halted deportations in March. The Supreme Court ruled the orders against deportation could only come from judges in jurisdictions where immigrants were held, which Boasberg said made him powerless Friday. Quote, I'm sympathetic to everything you're saying, end quote, Boasberg told Garnett. Quote, I just don't think I have the power to do anything about it, end quote. Boasberg this week found there's probable cause that the Trump administration committed criminal contempt by disobeying his initial deportation ban. He was concerned that the paper that ICE was giving those held did not make clear that they had a right to challenge their removal in court, which he believed the Supreme Court mandated. Drew Enzine, an attorney for the Justice Department, disagreed, saying that people slated for deportation would have a, quote, minimum, end quote, of 24 hours to challenge their removal in court. He said no flights were scheduled for Friday night, and he was unaware of any Saturday, but the Department of Homeland Security said it reserved the right to remove people then. ICE said it would not comment on the litigation. Also Friday, a Massachusetts judge made permanent his temporary ban on the administration deporting immigrants who have exhausted their appeals to countries other than their home countries unless they are informed of their destination and given a chance to object if they'd face torture or death there. Some Venezuelans subject to Trump's Alien Enemies Act have been sent to El Salvador and housed in its notorious main prison. There are two pictures associated with this article. The first picture has the following description. Venezuelan migrants deported from the United States arrive at Simon Bolivar International Airport in Mayquita, Venezuela, Sunday, March 30th, 2025. AP photo, Christian Hernandez. The picture is showing some people through a glass wall walking down a track off of the plane. The second picture has the following description. Venezuelan migrants deported from the United States peer through windows of an Eastern Airlines plane upon arriving at Simon Bolivar International Airport in Mayquita, Venezuela, Sunday, March 30th, 2025. AP photo, Christian Hernandez. The picture is of a plane and you can see people looking through the window. Centennial. Metro. Broomfield man gets life in prison for killing his wife after posing as ex-boyfriend and stalking her. As police investigated the messages, prosecutors said Daniel Krug began to realize that he could face criminal charges and started plotting how to kill his wife to silence her and because she didn't want to be with him anymore. By Colleen Slevin, Associated Press, April 18, 2025. There are three ads off to the side of the page. The first ad, get paid for good grades. Earn up to $15 for A's and B's. Your school, your community, your credit union. 303-360-0987. Districtcreditunion.com. There's also a QR code with a Apply Now button off to the left-hand side of the ad. The second ad, Centennial Muse. There's a list of different events happening. May 4th, Wes Barker Magic is Funny, The Bug Theater, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Plant and Pour, Taluna Distillery, Arvada, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Is Your Dog Getting Enough Exercise for a Healthy Lifestyle? Moss, Denver, Denver, Colorado. The Wiz, Saturday the 19th. Denver for the Center of Arts, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th. Liquid Stranger, 16 plus. The Mission Ballroom, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th. The Motet, 16 and over. The Ogden Theater, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th. 2025 State Leadership Conference, Denver, Colorado. The third ad, Mountain View Baptist Church. Repent and believe, John 3:16. Be our guest this Sunday. Sunday service, 11 a.m., Century Elementary School, 2500 South Granby Way, Aurora, Colorado. There are some blue mountains with an orange sunset in the background. Denver. A Broomfield man was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole on Friday for the murder of his wife after stalking her while posing as an ex-boyfriend. The mandatory sentence came a day after jurors found Daniel Krug, 44, guilty of first-degree murder, criminal impersonation, and stalking. With his marriage to Crystal Krug falling apart, prosecutors said Krug decided to play, quote, puppet master, end quote, by scaring his wife and then trying to win her back by protecting her from the fake stalking, uniting them against a common threat. Crystal Krug, a biochemical engineer, kept a log tracking the increasingly threatening texts and emails that suggested she was being watched. As police investigated the messages, prosecutors said Daniel Krug began to realize that he could face criminal charges and started plotting how to kill his wife to silence her and because she didn't want to be with him anymore. Prosecutors said he waited for her to return to their suburban home on December 14, 2023, after taking two of their children to school and then knocked her unconscious and stabbed her in the heart. At the time of the killing, the ex-boyfriend was an eight-hour drive away in Utah, where he was living, according to investigators. The defense stressed there was no physical evidence linking Daniel Krug to the violent killing, noting that there was no blood found in his car or his clothes, which his daughter said were the same that he was wearing when he drove her to the bus stop that morning. None of Daniel Krug's DNA was found at the scene, though partial DNA from an unknown person was found on her neck, the defense said. There are four pictures associated with this article. The first picture has the following description. District Attorney Brian Mason walks out of court following the murder conviction of Daniel Krug in Broomfield, Colorado on Thursday, April 17, 2025. AP photo, Thomas Piper. The second photo has the following description. Relatives of murder victim Crystal Krug hug outside of court following the conviction of her husband Daniel Krug in Broomfield, Colorado on Thursday, April 17, 2025. AP photo, Thomas Piper. The third photo has the following description. File. In this undated image provided by Broomfield Police Department, Colorado, shows Daniel Krug, Broomfield Police, via AP file. The fourth photo has the following description. An image of the home in which Crystal Krug was found stabbed and beaten to death is seen April 1st, 2025, in Broomfield, Colorado. AP photo, David Zalbowski. Centennial. Aurora Mayor and local think tank push work first strategy for homelessness. Quote, we're taking a different approach, end quote, Kaufman said. Quote, it's about transformation, not just shelter. Aurora is setting a new standard, and we hope others will follow, end quote. By Cassandra Ballard, Centennial staff writer, April 18, 2025. There are three ads off to the side of the page. The first ad, get paid for good grades. Earn up to $15 for A's and B's. Your school, your community, your credit union. 303-360-0987. Districtcreditunion.com. There is also a QR code with a Apply Now button off to the left-hand side of the ad. The second ad, Centennial Muse. There is a list of different events happening. May 4th, Wes Barker Magic is Funny, The Bug Theater, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Plant and Pour, Tuluna Distillery, Arvada, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Is Your Dog Getting Enough Exercise for a Healthy Lifestyle? Moss, Denver, Denver, Colorado. The Wiz, Saturday the 19th, Denver for the Center of Arts, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, Liquid Stranger, 16 Plus, The Mission Ballroom, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, The Motet, 16 and Over, The Ogden Theater, Denver, Colorado. Saturday the 19th, 2025 State Leadership Conference, Denver, Colorado. The third ad, Mountain View Baptist Church, Repent and Believe, John 3:16. Be our guest this Sunday. Sunday service, 11 a.m., Century Elementary School, 2500 South Granby Way, Aurora, Colorado. There is some blue mountains with an orange sunset in the background. Aurora. As Aurora prepares to open its new regional navigation campus to address homelessness, Mayor Mike Kaufman and a local conservative think tank made the case Thursday for a plan to require homeless people to work to participate in the city's new services program. Quote, it's a tough love approach to helping people, end quote, Kaufman told reporters at a press conference outside the unfinished homelessness center in northwest Aurora. The center is expected to open in stages and completely this fall. Kaufman partnered with the Metro Common Sense Institute on a presentation promoting a so-called, quote, work first, end quote, approach to addressing homelessness. The philosophy essentially requires homeless people seeking services and housing to commit to being sober and moving toward and keeping employment. Numerous vetted and peer-reviewed studies over more than a decade insist that so-called, quote, housing first, end quote, programs are more effective at getting people off the streets and moving toward long-term self-sufficiency. Proponents argue that the stability of getting off the streets makes drugs and alcohol rehabilitation work successful, as well as making participants more successful at getting and keeping a job. Aurora, led by Kaufman and former city council member Dustin Zvonik, have for years promoted the, quote, tough love, end quote, approach. Combined with new navigation center facilities, Aurora's new approach will require people living on the campus to, quote, work for their stay, end quote. The campus will be a one-stop destination for homeless people seeking help with getting identification, social and health services, as well as counseling for employment and rehabilitation. Kaufman joins Zvonek and members of the Common Sense Institute presented details building a case to persuade the federal government to fund Work First programs the same way federal agencies fund the widely adopted, quote, housing first, end quote, model, which has dominated national homelessness policy and grants. CSI's recent report, quote, No Place Like to Call Home, end quote, questions the effectiveness of housing first policies in cities like Denver, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Portland, where homelessness has continued to grow despite heavy public investment. Quote, If we want real progress statewide, we also need to fix the system, end quote, Zvonek said. Quote, Cities shouldn't be punished for pursuing the work first models simply because it doesn't fit within the housing first mold. Aurora is ready to lead, and I'm proud to stand with Mayor Kaufman as he continues to chart a new direction, one based on dignity, accountability, and structure, end quote. While Housing First has been scrutinized and heralded for years, touted for reducing chronic homelessness by placing individuals into permanent housing with optional services like social work and addiction treatment, Kaufman and Zvonek argue that the approach lacks the structure and accountability needed to produce long-term self-sufficiency. In contrast, Aurora's Work First program will require participants to actively engage in services such as mental health treatment, addiction recovery, job training, and case management as they move through a three-tier shelter and housing system. Quote, We're not just providing shelter, we're providing a structured path to change lives, end quote, Kaufman said. Aurora's $42 million regional navigation campus three-tier system will move from a no-privacy tier 1 with little commitment to a private room in a full commitment third tier. Tier 1 is congregate emergency shelter for individuals newly entering the system. Tier 2 is a semi-private room with more intensive case management and resource navigation. Tier 3 is transitional housing focused on workforce development and long-term stability. The goal for both Housing First and Work First systems is to get participants to become permanently housed and self-sufficient. The project is being funded through a combination of funding from Arapahoe, Douglas, and Adams counties, funding from the City of Aurora, the city's marijuana sales tax, and private financing. While no peer-reviewed studies currently support the Work First model as more effective than the Housing First, the Common Sense Institute and Aurora officials say they plan to track outcomes carefully, with the hope of offering a replicable model to other municipalities. Housing First in every city that has been tried has failed, Zvonek said. Quote, San Francisco's Housing First, Denver's Housing First. It hasn't worked for nearly two decades. We need to do something different, end quote. Homeless studies and experts dispute that claim. The Colorado Coalition for the Homeless and Metro Denver Housing Initiative have long claimed success at helping people reclaim lives and homes, along with similar advocates from other cities across the nation. The Common Sense Institute is basing its prediction of the success of the Work First approach on 1 year of research from Colorado Springs, Work First Approach, and San Antonio, Texas's Haven for Hope program, served as a model for Colorado Springs. Haven for Hope has a similar model to what Aurora plans to use at the Navigation Campus. In 15 years, San Antonio has experienced a 77% reduction in unsheltered homelessness in the downtown area, the CSI report said. Vetted studies and analysis was not included in the CSI report. Homeless experts point out that policies beyond housing programs affect homelessness data. Some cities, including Colorado Springs, adopted no-tolerance public camping bans in addition to service programs. Some experts say, quote, success, end quote, stories are sometimes skewed as a result of cities moving homeless people to other neighboring communities, according to a 2024 RAND study in Los Angeles. Denver and Aurora have been flagged by other metro communities for causing homeless migrations in the metro area. Another criticism by homelessness advocates of the Colorado Springs program is that camping bans and mandatory ticketing creates a revolving door at local jails. Homeless people collect unpaid tickets until they're jailed, then have no resources for housing when they get out and return to the streets, according to 2024 reporting by the Colorado Sun. The work-first approach could show successes, but the report published by CSI does not include full information about the housing-first approach. For example, the report said that the Mile High All-In programs in Denver spent $16 million on individuals who remained in unsheltered status after exiting the All-In Mile High program. While All-In Mile High dashboard shows that 38% of people in the program found permanent housing, and 82% are no longer outdoors, an overall length of stays in hotels or micro-communities is 173 days. The report also withholds the details that Denver's Basic Income Project had a 45% rate of people living in their own house or apartment after a 10-month span. The CSI report also states that about 1% of all in Mile High participants, 19 total, are known to have died while in the program. The report and the All In Mile High dashboard explain the deaths as a possibility when dealing with homeless communities. Jessica Prosser, Director of Housing and Community Services, told Aurora Council members during an April 10th Public Safety, Courts, and Civil Service Policy Committee meeting that one of the people matched to a housing voucher through the city was staying in a hotel while about to receive permanent housing and died in the hotel. Federal funding is a chief goal of the CSI project, according to Zvonik, who is now a fellow at the Institute focusing on issues of homelessness. Both Kaufman and Zvonik cited CSI data they say are used that required personal responsibility and service engagement provide a more sustainable path out of homelessness. There is growing concern about a predicted budget shortfall in Aurora for the next 2 years, where staff will need to prioritize funding, and one priority for City Council to consider is how important they find funding for the Navigation Campus, Aurora Deputy City Manager Robert Venegas said. Quote, "That's a volatile kind of market, the marijuana revenue, so I think we've been very conservative to make sure that funding is adequate for the Flex Fund," end quote, Venegas said. Quote, "We have a lot of other budget constraints. This will be a priority discussion like everything else. If council feels like this is something that we have to maintain, we certainly can prioritize that," end quote. Kaufman offered an optimistic prediction for data coming from the center after it opens later this year. Quote, "We're taking a different approach," end quote, Kaufman said. Quote, "It's about transformation, not just shelter. Aurora is setting a new standard, and we hope others will follow," end quote. There are two pictures associated with this article. The first picture has the following description. Common Sense Institute fellow Dustin Zvonik left listens as Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman addresses reporters in front of the future Aurora Navigation Center in Northwest Aurora. CSI Executive Director Kelly Caulfield, right, listens too. Photo by Cassandra Ballard. The second picture has the following description. Aurora Mayor Mike Kaufman talks to reporters inside the unfinished Aurora Navigation Center, April 17, 2025. The room, inside a closed Hyatt Hotel in Northwest Aurora, will eventually become a congregate overnight shelter. Photo by Cassandra Ballard. Centennial Citizen Independent, Volume 24, Issue 20, Week of April 17, 2025. Mother-daughter keep needlework alive. Diversions Needlepoint, now on Hamden Avenue, has been in business for more than 50 years. by Elizabeth Slay, eslay@coloradocommunitymedia.com. For over 5 decades, the mother-daughter-owned business, Diversions Needlepoint, has woven its way into the fabric of Colorado and now resides in Englewood's creative community. Carrie Davis, a Colorado native and owner of Diversions, was inspired by her late mother, Mary Lou Kidder, to practice the art of needlepoint. It was her passion for the art and eventually led her to pursue it as a career. Quote, "I saw her doing it and wanted to do it," end quote, Davis said. Quote, "I love the color, the people, the challenge, the creativity, and I love the tactical. I enjoy the kinesthetic," end quote. Davis was also inspired by a unique shop she discovered while studying in Boston to create her own store. After graduating college, Davis returned to Colorado with a clear goal: to open a business that offered a wide variety of fiber arts. In 1970, she and Kidder opened their first store in Vail, offering supplies for knitting, needlepoint, embroidery, and macrame. In 1979, after life changes, such as both women getting married, Davis and Kidder relocated to Denver and ran Diversions out of Mary Lou's basement. The shop participated in the Junior League of Denver's annual Mile High Holiday Mart, which is a popular event in Colorado, and found a new home at the Women's Exchange, where they remained for several years before the shop closed and they came to Englewood. Quote, "They all wanted to retire, but Mom wasn't ready yet, and I wasn't ready," end quote, Davis said. Quote, "So we came to Englewood, and we were at Hamden and Gilpin in that little shopping center for about 26 years. And then we needed more room, so we moved to this location, and we've been here, I think, for 7 years," end quote. Diversions is now located at 410 West Hamden Avenue in Englewood. Mandy Adams, Davis's daughter, also works at Diversions, and she said she grew up in the fiber business, even making her first project, a belt, at the age of 4. Adams brought her artistic talents to the shop, offering custom design services such as hand-painted canvases for needlepoint projects. Her ability to turn a customer's vision into a unique work of art quickly became a hallmark of the store. Quote, "I was just born artistic," end quote, Adams said. Quote, "I always drew and painted and played with color from the time I was just a little one. I am awful at math and everything else, but I can kind of draw," end quote. For Davis, working every day with Adams is one of the best aspects of owning her business. Quote, "Working together is wonderful," end quote, Davis said. Quote, "When your kids grow, you don't get to see them that much, but when they work with you, it's wonderful if you get to see her a lot," end quote. Sometimes that sets Diversions apart is not that only its products and services, but also its strong sense of community. The staff, a mix of paid employees and volunteers, is knowledgeable and passionate about needlepoint. Many of the staff members ensure that customers always receive expert guidance and support. Quote, "We've got a great group of women and wonderful people that volunteer here to help people," end quote, Davis said. Quote, "Every day is different. You never know what's going to happen or who's going to walk in the door, and that makes it fun," end quote. Diversions customers come from all over, including nearby neighborhoods to as far as South Dakota and even Argentina. The impact of the pandemic on the crafting world was notable. With people spending more time at home, Adams said many rediscovered old projects or started new ones. The shop saw an increase in new customers, particularly young people, who were drawn to the meditative qualities of needlepoint. Adams and Davis explained they believe the reason people love it so much is because of how much it helps with focus and relaxation. Quote, "Oh, it's highly addictive and meditative," end quote, Davis said. Quote, "It actually does kick off endorphins, which gives you a feeling of well-being while you're sitting and stitching. It also gives your mind a chance to kind of get it together," end quote. Adams said she enjoys the challenge and creative aspects of her art. Quote, I love making people happy, and I don't even realize the impact you're making heirlooms, end quote, Adams said. One challenge both Adams and Davis said they must face is competition with online businesses. However, despite that, they preserve and really enjoy the community they've built. Quote, we love the community and going somewhere to work every day, end quote, Adams said. Quote, we have a lot of people that have become friends just from coming in so much and that we know what they're up to. It's like a clubhouse, end quote. As the shop celebrates over 5 decades of business, they remain committed to providing a welcoming space where people can explore their creativity, build connections, and find inspiration. For them, it's not just about selling products, it's about building a community of makers. Quote, we hope to keep making people happy and inspire future generations and to keep needlework alive, end quote, Davis said. For more information on Diversions, visit http://www.diversionneedlepoint.com/products.html. There are 3 pictures associated with this article. The first picture has the following description. Co-owners of Diversions Needlepoint and mother and daughter, Carrie Davis and Mandy Adams, stand among the thousands of skeins of thread available in their shop located at 410 West Hamden Avenue in Inglewood. The second picture has the following description. Carrie Davis organizes skeins of thread in her shop, Diversions Needlepoint. She owns the shop with her daughter, Mandy Adams, and has been in business for over 50 years. The third picture has the following description. Co-owner of Diversions Needlepoint, Mandy Adams, paints needlepoint patterns on canvas paper. This is one of her many duties and the one she enjoys the most. Centennial Citizen Independent. Town Hall Arts Center hosts acrylics exhibit. Krista Falkenstein's work will be shown in Littleton venue through April 29th by Isabel Guzman. Isabel@cotln.org. Local artist Krista Falkenstein is showcasing 28 stunning artworks at the Stanton Gallery in Littleton's Town Hall Arts Center through April 29th. Featuring a range of sizes from intimate 30 by 30 inch canvases to bold 4 by 5 foot creations, her paintings burst with vivid acrylic colors and abstract interpretations of Colorado's natural beauty. Quote, I have no particular style, which is both good and bad, end quote, Falkenstein said. Quote, I use a lot of color, and that's the cohesiveness of my art. Some of the featured paintings and the town hall showing include colorful and textured pieces with titles such as Fall Frolic, Spring Renewal, Colorado Gold, and Something's Happening Here, Look. Fall Frolic is all about the feeling I get wanting to run amongst the crisp fallen leaves, Falkenstein said. She then went on to describe the other artworks. Quote, Spring Renewal was inspired by seeing bright colors popping up from recent snow cover. Something's Happening Here, Look, is all about the immense changes we are all experiencing as we look on, deciding how to go forward. Colorado Gold is the blue skies of Colorado, the snow which spurs our profitable ski industry, and the gold flakes of the gold mines, a significant part of the Colorado history. End quote. Falkenstein's artistic journey is deeply rooted in collaboration and community. A member of the Heritage Fine Arts Guild, she has collaborated with fellow artists to teach classes as a previous workshop director. She also is a member of the Women's Caucus for Art Colorado, where she has worked on canvas murals that are a part of traveling exhibit. Her creativity doesn't stop with her commissions. When working on personal projects, Falkenstein takes a free-spirited approach. She starts with throwing some paint on canvas, not entirely sure what comes next, but ready to embark on the creative process. Quote, Sometimes a lot of my paintings have just a ton of paint on it because I just haven't found where it goes yet, quote Falkenstein said. Falkenstein has even transformed her garage into a makeshift art gallery. Located at 2217 West Powers Ave, she displays her own work and that of other artists. Last year, she received a grant from the city's Arts and Culture Board to install a heating and air conditioning split so that the garage gallery can operate year-round. Quote, when I started the gallery, which is my husband's garage, so it's free for me, I wanted to share it with other people. I wanted to give them the chance to get their art out there. A lot of the artists might be displaying their work for the first time, and that's so scary, end quote, she said. Falkenstein started painting full-time in 2019. During the COVID-19 pandemic, she took on the task of painting a mural on her garage. Quote, it was the most wonderful experience I could have had, end quote, she said. In April 2020, she painted a mountain scene on her garage, which has since been changed many times. Quote, I had people drive by and stop, and you know, we had a mask on. We talked 6 feet away, end quote, Falkenstein said. Quote, every day, someone would stop and tell me how much they appreciate something beautiful being done during this time. They loved it, end quote. Falkenstein's abstract art style has shaped her view on life and appreciation of the imperfections. She took sculpting classes at Arapahoe Community College and fell in love with sculptures and ventured to learn how to make paper sculptures from another artist and started making a pelican. The teaching artist said the pelican's tail was too long and the feet were splayed out, to which Falkenstein responded that she knew, but she wasn't going to fix it. Quote, he's got a double the tail and he was crash landing, so that's why his feet are all splayed out, end quote, she recalled saying to justify her sculpture. She then remembered when she taught a first grade art class where the students were tasked with coloring in an image of the penguin. A girl in the class threw away her page after she colored it, claiming it was horrible. Quote, I got it out of the trash and said, it's beautiful, but I want you to come around the class with me, end quote, she said. Quote, I said, see, every single one of these penguins are good, right? She goes, yes. And I said, and they're all different, and I really want you to see that it doesn't matter that it doesn't look like the others. You want it to be you, end quote. 20% of proceeds from the sale of any piece of Falkenstein's art at the show goes to Town Hall. There are two pictures associated with this article. The first picture has the following description. Krista Falkenstein's artwork is showing at the Stanton Gallery in Littleton's Town Hall Art Center through April 29th. Photo courtesy of Krista Falkenstein. The photo is showing a bunch of different canvases with all sorts of different colors between blues, yellows, reds, pinks, oranges, and all different shapes and sizes. The second photo has the following description. Spring Renewal, acrylic on canvas by Krista Falkenstein, currently on display at the Stanton Gallery in Littleton's Town Hall Arts Center through April 29th. Littleton Independent, Volume 136, Issue 37, week of April 17th, 2025. Lawmakers slam early intervention program. Growing caseload for child therapy program creates $4 million funding shortfall, by Ann Schmicki, Chalkbeat. In late winter, Jeff Bridges got word that state funding therapy for his one-year-old son, who was born prematurely, would be slashed by half starting in July. Bridges was upset, but he had a better reason than most parents to be caught off guard. That's because the Arapahoe County Democrat is the head of a powerful legislative committee that makes key decisions about state spending. Members of that committee had repeatedly promised to protect funding for Colorado's $87 million early intervention program. The program provides therapy and related services to babies and toddlers with developmental delays, including Bridges' son. Bridges shared the story in a recent Joint Budget Committee hearing, where he and other members, both Democrats and Republicans, slammed the Colorado Department of Early Childhood, which administers the program, for poor communication and planning. Quote, "This is one of those places where if we could punish the department without hurting kids, man oh man, would I be on board with that," end quote, he said. The committee members' sharp words that March day raised questions about the early childhood department leadership and capacity, with lawmakers expressing concern that the state's youngest and most vulnerable residents could suffer because of internal problems at the department. For now, no significant cuts to early intervention are planned, either this spring or for the new fiscal year, which starts in July. That's sure to be a relief to tens of thousands of Colorado families whose children got free therapies through the program. In addition, Joint Budget Committee members have demanded better communication from the department, and department officials have signaled they'll comply. Officials from the Department of Early Childhood, which was created in 2022 and is headed by Lisa Roy, declined to interview requests from Chalkbeat. They sent a statement on April 3rd saying in part, quote, "The department is set to present an update to the Joint Budget Committee in the first weeks of June with recommendations for the financial sustainability of the program, incorporating feedback from families and providers. Current early intervention services will continue unchanged as a result of the JBC's action to identify additional funding for the program," end quote. Families surprised by planning service cuts. The uproar over early intervention began in late February when the Department of Early Childhood made an abrupt announcement. Starting in March, a $4 million funding shortfall meant therapies would be capped at 4 hours a month, a fraction of what many children were receiving. State officials said the shortfall was partly caused by a growing caseload in early intervention, which serves about 11,000 children a month, the expiration of federal COVID stimulus funds, and the fact that fewer children are eligible for Medicaid, a federal health insurance program that helps pay for the therapies, also contributed to the budget problems. Department officials, in the statement sent April 3rd, said they had difficulty accurately projecting early intervention caseload increases because eligibility rules for the program changed in 2020 and 2023, and because far more children have been screened for delays in the last 2 years. After the late February announcement about impending cuts, parents and early intervention providers were outraged and tearful, with many contacting lawmakers and the media to describe the damage the cuts would do. The Joint Budget Committee acted quickly to stave off the cuts this spring. At the same time, committee members chastised department officials for not letting them know about the potential shortfall sooner. Quote, "Why didn't somebody come over here and say, 'We've got a perfect storm. We need your help,'" end quote, Republican Representative Rick Taggart asked a department official at the February 27th committee meeting. Quote, "Nothing. Crickets. And yet, we've got to find out about it through the press and through our constituents and providers that could be devastated," end quote. He said, quote, "This is just unbelievable to me," end quote. The committee meeting ended on a calmer note, with Bridges urging department officials to keep committee members in the loop. Quote, "We are six human beings that folks can talk to, and we desire information, and we want to make sure that things like this don't happen when we can avoid it," end quote, he said. Even bigger problems emerge. A couple of weeks after the February Budget Committee meeting, the early intervention issue blew up again, this time prompting even more wrath from committee members. On March 14th, the committee heard from a legislative analyst that the program would need more than $16 million to prevent cuts for the 2025-2026 fiscal year. Quote, "Awesome," end quote, said Bridges sarcastically. 10 minutes later, he recounted learning about potential early intervention cuts planned for July from his son's physical therapist. During that meeting, committee members unanimously approved more than $16 million to plug the program's looming funding hole for the 2025-2026 year. They also thanked the legislative analyst for trying to forecast how the early intervention caseload would grow in the coming year, but expressed irritation that early childhood department staff hadn't done it themselves. Democratic Representative Emily Sirota, who called the early intervention saga, quote, "this whole disaster," end quote, noted that worried families were still contacting her, fearful their kids would lose important therapies. Quote, "hopefully today we can make people feel a little bit more at ease that their littlest ones will continue to get the services that they need," end quote, she said. Quote, "but the communication and the lack of work and transparency with us has been disappointing to say the least," end quote. Bridges noted he'd spoken to Roy, the department's director, that day. He said, quote, "I do feel the department recognizes the massive failures," end quote, that prompted the last-minute fixes by the budget committee. In recent weeks, the department has held feedback sessions with parents and early intervention providers and promised to improve its caseload forecasting with help from other state agencies. In June, the department is scheduled to report back to the Joint Budget Committee. This was reprinted with permission from Chalkbeat, a nonprofit news site covering education change in public schools. Sign up for their newsletters at ckbe.at/newsletters. There is one picture associated with this article. The following picture has the description: State Senator Jeff Bridges, a Greenwood Village Democrat and chair of the legislature's Joint Budget Committee in the Colorado Senate on Wednesday, March 12, 2025, in Denver, Colorado. Photo by Jesse Paul, The Colorado Sun. Bird Safaris, Latin Grilling are coming to Littleton. Cycling Without Age, Littleton Expands Arts and Culture Programs, by Isabel Guzman. Isabel at cotln.org. As the weather warms, birds like blue jays and black-billed magpies can be spotted along the South Platte River Trail in Littleton. This spring, Cycling Without Age Littleton, also known as CWAL, is partnering with the Denver Audubon Society to host a Trishaw bird safari along the trail on select days. CWAL, established in 2019 as a chapter of the broader Cycling Without Age movement, offers free bike rides for aging adults and those with limited mobility or intellectual abilities. Quote, "we are there to give everybody a wonderful experience in the outdoors. Wind in the hair freedom that you can only feel from riding a bike," end quote, said Barb Lotz, the executive director of CWAL. Starting in April, the Trishaw rides will be guided by an expert birder from the Denver Audubon Society. The tours will occasionally stop on the path to birdwatch and listen for bird songs. Cycling Without Age Littleton also purchased 10 binoculars for passengers and pilots to get up close views of the surrounding birds and scenery. Riders will also receive printed guides of local birds to mark if they see or hear it. Cycling Without Age Littleton is also working on a Braille version of the guide for upcoming Colorado Center for the Blind Bird Safari Rides. Quote, "we need to bring and expose people who couldn't do this on their own to the arts and cultures of Littleton," end quote, Lotz said. This winter, CWAL received a $9,000 grant from the Littleton Arts and Culture Board to develop programs that provide access to cultural and art-related events. Another new spring CWAL event is an immersive Latin grilling experience to be led by Pablo Aya, a chef at Origin Hotel in Golden and executive sous chef at Milk Market in Denver. Quote, "the goal is not that we just have food, but that we really look at where it comes from," end quote, Lotz said. quote, and this is going to be farm to table. This is going to be all homegrown food in Colorado, end quote. The cultural dining event will take place from noon to 4 p.m. on May 13th at Hudson Gardens and Event Center in Littleton. The bird safari rides will take place from 9:15 to 10:45 a.m. on April 29th, May 27th, June 10th, and June 24th, with a maximum of 6 riders per day. To secure a spot for either the bird safari or Latin grilling event, email cwalsecedulling@gmail.com or cwalschscheduling@gmail.com or call 720-456-0570. There is one picture associated with this article, and it has the following description. Bird watchers attend Cycling Without Age, Littleton's Bird Safari last summer, courtesy of Cycling Without Age Littleton. The picture is showcasing a few different people with bikes sitting right at the edge of a lake. Thank you for joining us for Arapahoe County News, read by Austin.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.